Blog Talk Radio.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. By some, he's been called controversial.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear? You turn your heart away from me each time that I draw near. Your eyes refuse to meet with mine, they glance away in fear. As if you should not look at your reception in the fear.
Now, keep in mind that some of my guests have been approached by Homeland Security or FBI saying, why are you going on the Clay Douglas Show?
My message to those guys, if they're listening this morning, is go get a cup of coffee. Maybe you'll learn something.
We both took the same oath, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't recall there being an expiration date on that.
Well, it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain? I can
the free American, Clay Douglas. Catch the free American weekdays at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern.
Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and drop the sun. Why do
For the podcast and more details, visit www.freeamerican.com or catch the podcast by phone by calling 832-999-8621.
Good morning. We had a guest scheduled, and I don't know what happened to him. Every time I tried to call him, I got an answering machine, which screwed up my old system. And this was a guy that said he was running for president, but I don't know. I haven't seen anything to verify that. Just another one of these people on the internet that may be somebody, may not be. So, we'll just move along. Just move along. Now, a few days ago, I did a show. Definitely, this is working. Let me see if this is working yet. Let's get up on a crusade. Truth Radio will be back on in a very short time. Crusade Radio is still, the line is still busy. So, again, looks like we're not doing that right now. I did let's do one more thing here. One more thing so we can get that working. We'll get our YouTube cranked up. Start recording here. That may or may not work. and it didn't. Somebody somewhere is really working to foul up this show. You would think that somebody somewhere in a cyberspace here doesn't want you to hear my message. All right. That has, this is working now. This is working now. And let's, and forgive me if you've already heard of this. Let me do a another intro here.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The New World Order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
He took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. By some, he's been called controversial.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear? You turn your heart away from me each time that I draw near. Your eyes refuse to meet with mine, they glance away.
Now, keep in mind that some of my guests have been approached by Homeland Security or FBI saying, why are you going on the Clay Douglas show?
My message to those guys, if they're listening this morning, is go get a cup of coffee. Maybe you'll learn something.
We both took the same oath, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't recall there being an expiration date on that.
Well, it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain?
He is the free American, Clay Douglas. Catch the free American weekdays at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern.
Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and drop the sun. Why do I think so all the time? I'm the only one.
For the podcast and more details, visit www.freeamerican.com or catch the podcast by phone by calling 832-999-86.
All right, trying this one more time here. It was Cody Robert Judy.
Hello, this is Cody Robert Judy.
Hello, Cody. I was just about to give up on you. I was getting frustrated.
I'm sorry about that.
I was getting frustrated with your answering system. Every time I called your answering system, I got voicemail instead of you. But
no.
I got you now, and so that ought to work out. That ought to work out pretty good. You sent me... You sent me a document, or you sent me a recording, actually, of a Dr. Ron Paul. And it's really a commercial for a financial services group, but Dr. Ron Paul made some good points in it. and I don't know. I don't know if you want to touch on that. Now, you are. What we're really talking about here, or what I'm aware of, is that you are suing Obama, and your case has actually gotten to the Supreme Court. Nobody else seems to have been able to do that. The justice system has short-stopped anybody that was trying to sue Obama on his eligibility question. And you talked about in the post that I put up here, you talked about a violence of breaking out on the at a conference that they were having. Bring me up.
That's right, Clay. We got a case in the United States Supreme Court. It's case number 149396, for those who would like to look that up. But what we have got going, I mean, there's been other people that have gone into the U.S. Supreme Court and got there, but what they haven't got is what's called standing. And what that means is basically that you've got to, even Obama's attorneys have referred to this, that you've got to have standing, and that means you've got to be in the race in order to question the eligibility in front of the court of law. And that is where my case has been just a little bit different, because I had standing. I was a presidential candidate in 2008. I also sued John McCain and Obama, and continued that in 2012. It was kind of funny. I just talked to an old friend, and he said, "Are you running for president again?" I said, "You know, I really have to, because my standing, I would lose my standing if I don't run." So it's been one of those things where I've just had to keep my standing in place. And in 2012, I ran as a Democratic candidate for president, and I had standing right away because Obama was the incumbent in the Democratic Party. So I started with ballot challenges and went to New Hampshire and went all the way up to the New Hampshire state courts, clerk of the state Supreme Court in New Hampshire. And then we went down to Georgia and started with Judge Mulahey in a executive court, and then graduated into the judicial system, the court system, went through their state court system, clerked the Georgia Supreme Court, and then went into the United States Supreme Court on those ballot challenges, which were unsuccessful. They came right at the time the election was happening. I was in the United States Supreme Court. And I know that the Supreme Court justices do not want to interfere with elections. This time around, it's a little bit different. The 2016 election is, you know, quite a ways away. Now, my case started in this United States Supreme Court this particular case, 1493-96. I don't want people to get confused. It started March 30th is when I got there. That's when you'll see the first entry of Judy versus Obama, 1493-96. Now, what has happened is we're still going. We've actually been scheduled for a second conference, and that second conference, which has never happened before, they've always been dismissed on the first conference. I mean, you didn't even make it to a second conference, you know. But my case, the first conference was June 18th, and we really expected just to be, you know, laid out cold right there and over and done with. But by the grace of God, we made it through that, and they rescheduled this. Now, the Supreme Court goes into what they call a recess about the 1st of July, and they go into a three-month recess. And a lot of people think that that means that the court goes home and nothing happens, but that's not true. that they might take a week vacation over the 4th of July, but they come back and then they start to hold hearings, and they continue cases that are actually what they call on the pending list or cases that are active. If you've got a pending motion within the court, then that could be considered during the recess time. And then the other cases that were granted certiorari, they also are active, and they go through proceedings during this recess. And then the court comes back in October. Now, what we were given June 18th was basically a second conference, which is scheduled for September 28th. This September 28th, so just about a couple of months away now. So that's where we're at right now.
Well, that's more than anyone else has gotten so far.
The last, there's also something, Clay, that is kind of interesting. I mean, this has really been, if you wanted to describe it in legal terms, this has been really quite a slugfest, is what I call it. It was, I came in to the court and in March 30th, so from March 30th to about June 18th is approximately 80 days. And the court has plenty of time during that time, that first 80, you know, days. Usually cases are only in there about 60 days before they go to hearing. So mine was in there for about 80. And I went in as a filing in a form of pauperis, which means I couldn't file the court fees. I don't know if people know that people should know in the United States Supreme Court, what happens is there's about a $300 filing fee, but the real expense, if you're coming into the court and paying the filing fee, is the printing cost of the form that you're filing, the writ of certiorari, which can be anywhere from, you know, it could be very small, but usually they are about 20 pages long, and then the end, appendix is about 20. So you're basically printing up a booklet that's, I don't know if you know, the constitutional pamphlet book. That's, I think, 86 pages long. But that's basically what you're printing up for the court, and you have to do 40 of them. So you're basically making a book and having it printed and formatted that way. And the printing cost just for that runs between this $2,500 to $4,000. You know, it's quite expensive to do that. And,
that brings up another question to me. Where
yeah,
do you get the money to pay your lawyers and all of these fees?
Well, you know, in D.C. lawyer expenses, this, the actions that I've taken would have cost, you know, multiple millions of dollars since 2008. If you go to my post, www.codyjudy.blogspot.com, use it on every, at the end of every post, you'll see the 14 actions that I have taken in the federal courts, state courts, and other types of courts on this eligibility issue. And those costs would have run multiple millions of dollars if we had used an attorney. But I have done and filed all of the work myself, so I haven't had to use the expense of the attorney. It's been myself filing all of this work, the writ of certiorari, and it's really taken a lot of time for me to learn how to do it, and and to go through the filing processes. So I don't know that we haven't got any real success, or what we call real success, yet. But the argument and the record in there, now I am the only presidential candidate in the entire United States who filed the eligibility issue on a principal basis versus a party basis. And what I mean by that is I actually took McCain also in 2008 to the federal court in Las Vegas, Nevada, and sued him on his eligibility because he was not born in the United States, and that's one of the requirements that I like. The natural born citizen clause, in my opinion and my representation, has always been born in the U.S., some parents, and that requires basically a two-generation thing where if you're immigrant parents, you at least came to America and you become citizens, and then children born while you were American citizens, you have that citizenship, then your children born here in America, they were the natural-born citizens of the United States of America. And they're not naturalized. There's no paperwork to file. They're not listed in any kind of naturalization or what we call Title VIII aliens and nationals format. There's about 8, 10 or so where people, you know, coming in, there's all kinds of different variables, you know, and the government's basically outline those in the Title VIII Aliens and Nationals Act. And, you know, if you've got one parent that's an American citizen and you were born outside of the United States in a foreign nation, and, you know, like Ted Cruz, your mom was married to a foreigner. In Ted Cruz's case, he was born to a father who actually had natural-born citizenship in Cuba, and then he fled there and went up to Canada and became a citizen at Canada. So there's three variables there for Ted Cruz. And then they came to America and became citizens. Ted Cruz was born in Canada and then came over here, and he just barely a year ago renounced his, you know, U.S. citizenship, and you know, he's got, you know, about $30 million people have donated to his campaign on for an office he's not qualified for. And Senator Marco Rubio and Governor Jindal, Senator Rubio's the senator from Florida, and Bobby's from Louisiana. Now, they're both very articulate speakers. They're very educated. They've actually got these high offices. That is what I call the real genuine extension of friendship America has always offered, even immigrants. It's only the office of the president and vice president that required the natural born citizen test, born in the U.S. to citizen parents. And the other offices like governor or, you know, the senators or representatives, these offices only required you to be a citizen, which meant, like Senator Ted Cruz's situation, he could qualify. Or in Senator Marco Rubio's case, in Florida, his parents were not citizens when he was born here in America. So he's basically what they term or the slang term is he was an anchor baby, or parents come over, you know, I don't know if they were illegal or on work permits or whatever, but they're not U.S. citizens. They come over and the baby is born in the United States boundaries. And the 14th Amendment of our Constitution covers those that are naturalized or any person born in the U.S. that becomes a citizen. But that is different than a natural-born citizen, which is the qualification for the United States president and vice president, okay? So that's where the conflict of understanding is right there, where Cruz and Rubio and Jindal are also basically saying that their citizenship counts, you know, as a natural-born citizenship. And the thing about that is Constitution constructions prohibit basically alienating one part of the Constitution for another part, where two could be honored, both honored, they have to honor both, one part of the Constitution cannot mix out or exempt another part of the Constitution unless it's specifically written as an amendment. And that requires two-thirds of the Senate and the House and a signature from the President. Quite a process there. And it's also notable that the Congress has the legislative part of the legislative branch of Congress in the body of the House and the Senate. They've tried 8 times since 2003 to change it. So the President, the Office of the President, the Vice President did not have the stipulation of natural born citizen. They tried 8 times since 2002 and they have been unsuccessful. They haven't had the votes to pass it. So in my opinion, that is the legislative mandate that basically entails the natural born citizen to remain intact for the Office of the President, Vice President. It's not been changed legislative, and that gives the court the answer as far as which way they should rule, or, you know, that they need to honor the Constitution. The courts in the judicial branch of our government, their responsibility is to uphold the Constitution. You know, they try to uphold what the legislative branch.
Hold on just a second.
Go ahead.
Take a breath. Cody and Robert, Judy is my guest today. We just got on Crusade Radio. The line was busy until now. I tried 3 different times. It was busy now. Now we've got it on, and now we're broadcasting. And Cody, Robert, Judy ran for president last year. And this year, his case, he also last year, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, you filed a lawsuit with the Supreme Court against Obama for not being a natural born citizen.
That's right.
Seemed to be a little late, all the damage is done, but the damage done to America was not started by Barack Obama. I would say it was started by the first George Bush, Bill Clinton, his partner in crime, the man that was in charge of keeping the state boys off of the drug deliveries going to a little place called Mena, Arkansas. And there is a lot wrong with our government. I've been doing a little search on history here, and we're in pretty bad shape. Is this what motivated you to run for president? And let me start that part of that conversation by telling you, I worked with a presidential candidate back in 1996 who went to the Republican parties. I traveled with him across the country. He was telling the Republicans that we could eliminate the Federal Reserve, $6 trillion in debt, which is more than doubled now, and that the Federal Reserve was basically an unconstitutional organization. And every time Charles got up to speak, every cameraman on stage turned the cameras off and pointed them at the ground. That should be some kind of clue to you clueless people out there who really runs this country. It's the people that bought up, and remember, Reuters was bought by the Rothschilds in the late 1800s or early 1900s, and they bought every media company out there. We used to have a lot of media companies. Now we've got about 6. And they're all owned by the same people. And one of my favorite judges on there, one of the only things, Judge Napolitano, was, and I've got a lot of things that we can talk about, the Alien and Sedition Act, the Espionage Act, of 1917, Lincoln as the bad guy, and we've got a lot of people in Congress that are basically imposters. They're working for, as Lyndon LaRouche, another presidential candidate that I met, he pointed the finger at the British, the Bar Association, and the City of London, where all the banks are housed. So we're the research shows that we're basically ruled around the world by three cities. The City of London, Washington, D.C., and the Vatican. What did you find out as presidential candidate, as a presidential candidate? What party were you in? What did you learn? What did you learn, and what are some of the answers if you had been elected? Now, I got a friend, he wants to run for president, but he doesn't have any answers for me when I say, how are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? How are you going to reach the people if the vote is not counted by the abusers? If, the media were not controlled by the people, and I've got a quote up. I've got a quote up on my website that should be something that every American should read. It's by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He says, "You must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators." That's Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Nobel Prize winning writer. Can you answer? I know I've just asked you a lot of different questions.
Yeah, well, let me start off, Clay, by saying, to me, in my very humble belief, I'm a Christian person, and I believe in Jesus Christ, and He is my Savior, and without His good grace, I don't have a chance. This earthly life is very, very short, and will look to us like a dream. And so, to your very pointed question, why did I run for president? What was my motivation? I have to say that in spiritual and religious view, and the communications from God, the good Lord called me to do that, to run for president of the United States, and did so in a way where I felt like it was a direct communication from Him to me. One of my missions in life that He wanted me to do. So I just, leave it at that. And, people sometimes wonder, why people do things. And when it comes to something like that, I would not entertain running for office in the particular situation and circumstances I am, any more than you would say in the Bible, Noah thought he could build a ship and he'd never built one before, and or Moses called to go out and tell Pharaoh to release the people in Egypt when Pharaoh was the Pharaoh and Moses was the outcast and the low of the low. So that is about the same situation that I can relate to Christians where they might understand my particular situation in what I have done. So that's my testimony of the reason I decided to run for president and entertain that. Now, I have, in my experience, what I have learned is that I have learned a great deal of admiration for our founders and framers in the fact that they were able somehow in their limited capacities to create a Constitution of the United States of America that not only would serve them well, but would serve future generations clear to this point. And a Constitution that was not fixed in stone, but was also flexible in the fact that through 2/3 of the majority of Congress, it could be changed. They anticipated changes, and they put inside as a mechanism the concept of the Constitution changing. And so it does serve us, and it has served us as a great protection throughout our whole 200-year-plus history. So that is probably what I have gained most. I've gained more respect and admiration for our founders than I've ever had before. And the fact that I got into this race and immediately stood up for the principle of the Natural Born Citizen Clause, the reason that I did that was because that is the central, if you want to take the Constitution and look at it as a ball in your hand, the Natural Born Citizen Clause is the nucleus of that ball. So that's the center part of that ball in your hand, the nucleus. If you want to destroy the United States from within, you get it through the presidency. The office of the presidency is the part that you get it from. It controls the commander-in-chief of the armies. It's got the nuclear codes. It's got the ability, executive power to veto legislation that's passed from, a body of the House and the representatives. It's got the power of the executive order where you can actually, overrule what the legislative body does in a temporary basis until they pick up legislation, which is what Obama has done on immigration. So for anybody to say that the natural born citizen qualification for the president is not very, I want to say vital, with an exclamation mark on that vital. It is vital, the qualification for the office of president. Now, I know there's been a lot of presidents that have been qualified natural born citizens. You talked about a few of the other presidents and the damages that were done. And I think, a lot of people understand that war in Iraq was a war that we should not have fought. It's cost us, trillions of dollars and, many, many lives that were lost for America. And it has, in some ways, you could say, been a manipulation to weaken America, to tempt America to go abroad, to be the policeman of the world. But our founding documents basically tell us to respect other nations' borders, and concern ourselves with things that are at home more, within the borders of the United States. Now, when we go across those borders of the United States into Iraq or something like that, and let's say, everybody says we had great success over Iraq, we had things under control, but then we lost it again because ISIS has come up. We've got a great big problem over there. Well, guess what? Over there is over there. It is not a state of this nation. It's not a state of the United States. And, Senator Lindsey Graham, he says, if we don't handle the problem over there, I guarantee you it's going to be over here, Well, of course, we have a responsibility to our allies, okay? But we have a responsibility to this people also, and that includes, protecting the borders of the United States and protecting interest, abroad, where all of our citizens are. So we have a really you know, that's kind of a balancing act that we have to act. You referred in your question to the manipulation of currency. Well, currency is just that, currency. It allows people to be able to get what they want, to buy, sell, trade without killing each other, or, you know, it makes things a lot easier. So currency has been the thing that's come around for this century, and we're able to buy and sell and market to nationals and ourselves without, you know, brutally taking, you know, my idea is right type of mentality. And when it comes to those currencies, you know, I always say, you know what, George Washington also referred very poignantly to God in our universe, the great creator, being in charge of all of the affairs of all man. That means while God is, you know, we look to him and we've got our United States Constitution, well, other countries, they've got their constitutions, they've got their ways of doing things, and those are the laws that they are bound by. And we have a constitution, and these are the laws that we are bound by. So we have to respect other people's, you know, laws and uphold our own laws. And this has been the great conflict in recent modern history is we've got a great amount of people that are very, very wealthy, and they would just as soon wipe out all of the barriers and have a world global governance because it creates a total control for them. And I don't think God wants the total control under a very, very few people, you know, at this particular time. Christians believe, you know, Jesus Christ comes back to earth, and, you know, that's a different story. Where, you know, we have a 1,000-year millennial era and 1,000 years of peace. But at this time, you know, that is not happening. We're looking forward, Christians look forward to that in the future. But I would say to all Christians, you know what, just like our President George Washington said, we are all in God's hands right now, and so is our nation, and there's a promise that was made to George Washington that our nation would survive the union of the United States. The union, which is very important, the United States of America, when you say the union, it includes all 50 states, that will survive all kinds of turmoil and all kinds of storms, and he specifically named three great storms, World War I, World War II, and we've got a conflict that is basically going to be World War III, I think. And that is where, you know, the United States is trying to be torn up and divided by the other nations. It's not us.
Now, a master mason from the days of the Civil War actually predicted three world wars. That was, he predicted World War I, and he predicted World War II. With the Muslims, and it seems that that is the direction we are going in. But
well, definitely a case where you know, they said that they wanted to destroy Israel, wipe Israel off the face of the map, and they've got our eyesight. They call Israel the little Satan, and the United America the great Satan.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because we respect all religions. We respect all religions. We've got multiple religions, and they don't believe in multiple religions. That's what Iran is. It's a republic of Islam. We are a republic of our constitution. There's the difference right there.
Well, okay? Now I'm trying to look at that, and I do that. I've got one story that I brought up today about Vladimir Putin, and frankly, I am more impressed with Vladimir Putin as a leader than I am Barack Obama. And Kevin Barrett, a writer for Veterans Today, where we broadcast on here, said it's worth noting that Russia and Iran, the two nations most successfully resisting New World Order regime change, are doing so in the name of God. Benton's reference to Satanism was a pointed rebuke to the New World Order elites, who, though they push militant secularism on the societies they are trying to undermine, are closet Satanists. Now, what Putin said is, so you want to worship Satan? By all means, but leave Russia out of it. Rest assured, I will be your worst nightmare. You can quote me on that. During the Cold War, the United States and much of the West argued that the Soviet Union was a godless nation. Last year, Vladimir Putin took that pendulum, swung it back in the other direction, and it landed on the Zionist regime. Patrick Buchanan put it then, in the new war of beliefs, Putin is saying it is Russia that is on God's side. The West is a Gomorrah. Putin said many ethno-Atlantic countries have moved away from their roots, including Christian values. Policies are being pursued that place on the same level a multi-child family and a same-sex partnership, a faith in God and a belief in Satan. This is the path to degradation. And if you think Putin is just pulling your leg, get this. Here we've got a statue of Satan unveiled in Detroit. And it shows here, this video shows the crowds attending the Satanic Temple statue unveiling here. Just a couple of minutes here. Let's see what that's got. The Washington Times reported then, while this video is loading, that portrayed Russia as a staunch defender of traditional values against what he had depicted the morally bankrupt.
In the end, the group made good on its promise to make this an exclusive event, just patient enough to make it through the line.
Yeah, this is just a film showing this exclusive event, an unveiling of a satanic statue in Detroit. In social and religious conservatism, Putin was a former KGB officer and insisted traditional values is the only way to prevent the world from slipping into chaotic darkness. As part of this defense of Christian values, Russia has adopted a law banning homosexual propaganda, and another makes it a criminal offense to insult the religious sensibility of believers. Although Putin has never made a secret of what he calls, when he says his deep Christian faith, his first decade in power was largely free of overtly religious rhetoric. Little or no attempt was made to impose a set of values on Russia or lecture to the West on morals. Certainly, Putin put the moral equation back on the table. Kevin Barrett declared that Putin here was trying to put the fear of God into the new world order. Barrett moved on to make a forceful argument that much of the Zionist establishment in the West is afraid of Putin because the establishment lives in fear. Russian President Putin is resisting. That is why the Western propaganda machine is calling him names. It's worth noting, says Barrett, that Russia and Iran, the two nations most successfully resisting New World Order regime change, are doing so in the name of God. And Putin's reference to Satanism was a pointed rebuke to the New World Order elites. What do you think?
Well, I think that one thing that you have to acknowledge as far as Putin is concerned is, you know, he's been in leadership quite a long time in Russia, and never kind of, you know, gone away. And as far as a leader of Russia is concerned, you know, the Russian people have you know, elected him, and they have their laws. But I got to tell you, you know, I know he came out of the KGB, and one thing that they're very, very good at is their own propaganda. And so if they wanted to put in the hearts of Americans the idea that to weaken us and the idea that they are much more moral people or godly people and that God is on their side, then that is, you know, kind of an aggrandizement of their own, you know, propaganda against us, okay? And we can't fall for that, okay? Now, I'm a Democrat.
Stop you for just a second. What about our propaganda? What about our propaganda that we use to go murder millions of people in Japan, starting in World War II with Japan? I've got. I'll be talking about that later in an article that I wrote. And they've also used the propaganda to go into Iraq. How about Gaddafi and Libya? What was that? That wasn't Russia. That wasn't Russia. Had nothing to do with it. Russia had tried to protect Syria to keep the same thing that happened to Gaddafi from happening to that. And Gaddafi, anywhere except our propaganda, is a good guy here. We're more guilty of propaganda, in my opinion, than anything Russia's doing.
Well, I can certainly understand your point, and if I was president of the United States, Gaddafi would still be alive. Hillary Clinton basically laughed and giggled while he was, you know, dying, because she does not respect borders. She did not respect our Constitution. She hasn't stood up for, wanting to keep our borders secure. She wants that to be porous. So she lives a double standard. Now, I understand when you elect people that have double standards in their own lives, that you're going to get a double standard, okay? And of course, that's what I'm doing at my very level best to avoid. As far as, I'm running in the Democratic Party again, so I have her as in a primary contest. And, you know, what I would say to people is, you know, under our laws of the United States Constitution. You might disagree with me, Clay, because you're, I don't know if you're an independent or a Republican, but as a Democrat, we have stood up, or I have stood up anyway. I'm not going to say the whole party has stood up. I know there's things about the Republican Party that you say are very, you know, that we both say are wrong, and they should not have been done. They got us trillions of dollars in debt. They've sold our future generations in a generational theft. Okay, so no, I don't agree we should have gone into Iraq. I don't agree that we should have gone into Libya. I think we should be minding our own business and not being the world's policeman at our own expense. That is just stupid. Okay,
I'm
standing up.
Republicans and Democrats, two wings of the same bird. And it ain't an eagle. It's a global vulture. It's feeding on the carcasses of countries that the Republicans or Democrats or both houses have gone in and helped destroy.
You know, that's probably said very well. So I can just say, as far as the Constitution is concerned, I can understand where Putin would be saying things that, work for his own a benefit. We wouldn't expect less, would we? As far as our Constitution, you know, I have always stood up for equal rights of citizens under the 14th Amendment, the United States Constitution, and I believe it is there, for equal privileges and equal rights to be upheld, that the government should not be one that comes in and is the, moral crusader on all of human nature, okay? And I'll put it that way. we have a responsibility under the law to protect our citizens under what that law affords. And I'll also tell you that anything that would inhibit the liberty and freedoms of Americans is not what we would want to stand up for. We don't want to imprison people. Now, there are governments that would like to imprison people, and they do so for particular reasons of their outer characteristics. They do so because of their beliefs. And these are things that we need to stand up as Americans and say, you know what, that might be okay for you in your land, but we've got a different example to set here in our land. And our land is a land of liberty and freedom. And, you know, if you want to hit us over the head with the moral club that says same-sex marriages are not constitutional, but you're not looking at our Constitution very well, that guarantees citizens, all citizens, equal protections of the law and equal privileges. And so that's the problem, and that's what we've got to uphold. I've always stood up for same-sex marriage, not because I'm gay, not because I have been married to a man or want to be married to a man. I'm very heterosexual. I'm very family-oriented. I'm a family man. But when it comes to the Constitution and law, it runs through my veins. And I will tell you right now, come down on the side that defends people from being put in prison for any reason that is amoral, immoral, against the laws of nature that God has given to them, against the freedoms and liberties that we afford other citizens of the same like in different areas or genders. Or even women. I protect women from being put in prison during the gestation period. I don't like people putting people in prison for those type of reasons, and that is the civil rights banner that I live of.
Let me pass you this joint over there. You want to smoke that with me?
What's that?
I said, let me pass this joint over to you. You want to smoke that with me? I'd like to smoke that with a presidential candidate, because I believe that putting anybody in prison for a plant that God gave us is a crime. That should be a crime, not possessing a plant. And I
agree with you there. And people don't understand, you know, between $25,000 and $50,000 a year. You know, if you want to start smoking stuff, that's the cash that America is smoking by putting people in prison for those type of things and those type of substances. That is ridiculous, because, you know, you talk about a war on drugs. Let's talk about a war on freedom. Putting people in prison for, you know, substances they put in their own body is ludicrous. It really is.
They can be grown in your backyard. If you can grow all the pot you want in your backyard, then we don't have to have criminal cartels. We don't have to have bankers clearing the cash, laundering the cash that these drug barons are brought in. And as an investigative reporter, I can tell you that most of the drug czars work for the United States government. They're called the CIA or Mossad. They went and took over the drug business in South America. Colonel Edward Picatolo.
So, I mean,
number one.
They'd like to make the food the drug too, you know, and water the drug that is controlled by them also. I mean, that's what they've got with the. It seems that they always take a good thing that can actually produce more food, a good seed, and then they want to illegalize anything else that comes around it, you know. And so they've got these, you know, the Monsanto seeds that they do not produce themselves, but they are resistant to disease. They are resistant to drought. They're going to produce more food for us. But they want to illegalize all the other seeds that produce themselves, because they say the cross-pollination is bad for us.
So that's, in a sense, basically trying to control the food market. And they already try to control all the water. So as far as making a drug, the government is always in business to try to control and manipulate the substances that Americans and people need for their own welfare and their own body. And they do that as a hostage, holding a hostage until you pay. So you become dependent upon them, and that's power, you know, that they want and crave. So yes, you know, there has to be a balance within this that is reasonable, and I think you've got to have a person in there with some common sense, where the balance can be held and honored and respected. So that's, you know, what I always hope to do. You know, I wanted to get back, because I don't know how much time we've got, Clay, but I wanted to get back to the Supreme Court case and let people know that this is very important. That, you know, I put an application in there for more time, and it was denied by Justice Sotomayor around July 3rd, I believe. So that tells us that my case was kind of active beyond the court recess. And then she denied this. And in that application, now an application in the United States Supreme Court is almost like a separate case. They give it a separate case number. So if you go to the United States Supreme Court.
The Oklahoma City and Waco were real and people died. It was Waco that motivated me to help start the militias, which then got me demonized by the ADL. A multi-million-dollar propaganda organization created to free a Jewish child molester and murderer in the early 1900s. Donald Trump was on my mind that day also. Here was a billionaire saying all the right things about America, our border, and more. But someone pointed out on my show that Trump supports Israel and then his daughter married a Jew. Again, on my show, I've told you I don't care who your grandmother slept with. What matters is what you do today. Enter Naomi Wolf. Perhaps we're related. I remember an ancient uncle Wolf who lived to be 100. My family was from Germany. Naomi is beautiful. Had I met her years ago, I might have done my damnedest to make her mine. She's a poet, singer, and songwriter. The piece she did on Vietnam is still on my site. She did say her parents or grandparents were in the German concentration work camps. Mine weren't, but I was. I helped build a prison in Texas. She was speaking at a Liberty Forum in the Free State Project. She calls her talk The End of America. It's here. She talks about the 10 steps dictators take to shut down liberty movements. She caught my attention when she mentioned militias. Even more of my attention was riveted when she talked about Guantanamo. Guantanamo prison and the incarceration of anyone or everyone, journalists included, that caught the attention of the tyrants. She points out she was a little Jewish girl from Brooklyn who was brought up to believe guns were bad. After the study she made to do this talk, she now believes in their proper place in society. She also believes in the militia. The moral of this story is that there are bad people out there, and they are plotting against your freedom. They did in the past, and if you're not vigilant and aware, they will do it again. That is the point Naomi makes, and that's what I want you to understand about me. I need your support. I have a ticket I can't pay because they raised a fine, so I can't pay it, so I have no license to drive. If I can't drive, I can't speak, can't sell my books, my films, or magazines. I started with the Japanese. Yes, we were in a war. Did they deserve to have well over 100 million of their people killed? I don't think so. And who killed them after a truce was declared? America. Should Americans be put in FEMA camps for the crimes of the leaders of our fathers and grandfathers? What about the genocide of the indigent Americans? Who should pay for the loss of millions of their families? Naomi Wolf's family spent time in the German concentration camp, yet everything she warned you about is true, and you could be next. Naomi Wolf is Jewish. She is doing the same work as I am. We should be standing together saying it's not going to happen here. I don't care who Donald Trump's daughter married. He wants to do the same thing for America as I do. He could have my support. The buck and the blame stops here. And I signed this to be free American. Now, I hope I got the point. What the enemy wants to do is divide and conquer. Oh, Clay's a biker. You don't want to support him. Oh, Clay's in the militia. He could be dangerous, you know. Naomi Wolf is Jewish. We shouldn't be supporting her. Bullshit. What do you think? I'd like to get your opinions on this. Again, I think this is conquer. This is what they did to us all. We're all Americans, aren't we?
I was just going to say, I really like the idea of including everybody that's Americans, United States citizens as Americans, and for the office that I'm running for, that's what my concern is. I have voiced my opinion to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, which is the umbrella that has protected us. And, it's a legitimate concern for people to understand or want to know, the mentality of somebody that's going to serve as commander-in-chief of the armies and navies and air force and the marines and serve as the executive chief in the executive branch of the in the office of the president. And, my mentality really is, respect. We need to strengthen ourselves so we can come from a point of respect when it comes to dealing with other countries. We need to make trade fair so that, we can maintain our jobs and they're not all exported by the rich companies because they can build something cheaper in Mexico or import something from China much cheaper and is a disadvantage to Americans. You know, as far as the bombs that were dropped in Japan, it's any human life really lost is a tragedy and something not to be glorified about as far as I'm concerned. I have a great respect for human beings and their pursuit of happiness on this good earth that we have. And, I don't think anybody wants to breathe in, a bad air or drink bad water or eat unhealthy food. Those are things that are common concerns across the globe and that we need to do everything we can to protect. I also think that when it comes to war, we have a Geneva Convention should be upheld. I don't believe in waterboarding. I believe in treating people with dignity and respect, whether they're a prisoner or citizen, and that we can get, make someone your friend. You don't have an enemy. That's a philosophy that Abraham Lincoln proposed, which I treasured and thought was very poignant and wise. That's what wisdom is the use of intelligence from the experience that you've had. So that's how you become wise, is by using it in a good way. And that's the kind of person I am. I understand that the war would have dragged on in World War II for much, much longer and many, many, many more. Perhaps even in the millions on both sides would have died if those bombs had not been dropped. As far as the concerns that they had in the past, if you don't pertain and you don't care about what was happening in those particular circumstances and those particular conditions, that's what happened. We have to live with the aftermath and that includes both nations. And, you know, as far as the monetary expenditures, Japan's made more money importing Japan-made cars, I think, than any other country in America. So we have been a great asset to Japan. And the people of Japan, I really love all and respect all people. I love the Japanese people, their industry. You know, they are great industrious people. Same with China and Russia's people. You know, I respect the people and the qualities and characteristics and the talents that they have. But I am not running for president.
Nagasaki is a hell of a lot prettier and in better shape today than Detroit.
You know, you've got a point there. And that's one of the main concerns that I have, is that we need to look within our own vessel now and rebuild renovate with a revolution here in America.
We've got bridges
that are dilapidated, buildings that are dilapidated, and roads that are dilapidated, and we need to unleash the creative genius America has inside and really get busy and build a new America.
Let me address that, because I have a plan for that. My friend, who I just talked to yesterday, I think he's just turned 90. His name is Richard Kelly Hoskins, and he's written several books. He says that the basis of every civilization is the self-sufficient family farm. And when you say that, what I see, I traveled across Texas and I would come over a hill and I'd see a little farm out there, not real big, few acres, with a windmill, pumping the water up and watering their crops and taking that Saturday night bath in the big tub outside. And Richard said the basis of every civilization is the self-sufficient family farm. Well, I came up with a plan when I asked myself, how did we get by in this country 100 years ago? How did we get by? It was with the self-sufficient family farm. And if we grow our own foods and generate our own power from everything God gave us, whether it's magnetics, whether it's the sun or the wind, with the battery systems that we've got today, we don't need the government. We don't need the bankers for nothing. And we could take this whole concept and go into the shopping malls and grow food. Protected, by the way, from the chemtrails and all the other pollutants that they're putting in our water and in our air. There is somebody out there trying to kill us, and our government has to have a part in this. We see this... I see this over and over again. People are discovering this. When we first came up with this over 20 years ago, it was that's a conspiracy. No, that's just the exhaust from the planes. No, it's not. No, it's not. There's something that they're spraying on us, aluminum, barium, a few other things. And it's affecting your crops. It's affecting your thinking. The fluoride that they put in our water is a poison. If a fluoride truck turned over on the highway, they'd block it off. It's poison. And somehow we're just accepting that. I don't understand how people can just accept that. I've looked at that. I've talked to people about it. We've taken pictures of the inside of these planes. We've taken pictures of the tops of the planes. We know who's doing it. Well, we know what companies are doing this. If you want a healthy population, there's things we need to do to change this, to alter this. but we could be doing it in our cities. Detroit could look like Nagasaki in a few short years. They could take these apartment buildings and put gardens on the roof. Matter of fact, there's five or six companies down in the south that are putting greenhouses on the roof of their supermarkets. So the vegetables that you buy in that supermarket was grown that day. There are positive ways to restructure our society once we take the major corporation and the banksters that finance them out of this.
And well, that's very, very true. In the local local farmers markets that I go to and that are available in every town, and I totally think that that's a very positive thing and an example of what America is actually doing to become more independent in their own communities. I agree with states' rights and, our 10th Amendment basically gives all rights not explained or articulated to the states. I think that we look at that all the way across the board, and we see a lot of waste of money in the Department of Education in the federal system that needs to be curtailed. We see a lot of money in the EPA systems that needs to be curtailed and saved, and we see a lot of money wasted in the IRS system that we have right now, and instead of a fair tax system that could, I really think I've actually advocated Clay, because I've been so upset about the profiling the IRS has been guilty of, and Lois Lerner and that whole mess. One of the biggest things that we have right now, as far as a problem that we need to face immediately, is the trust factor of the American people in their own government. That needs to be restored, and I think what we really need is a sabbatical on tax, income tax, to restore the faith and trust in America of the people in their own government. And so I actually called for that sabbatical on the income tax. And, that might be a jump start that we actually do.
Isn't that called in the Bible? I mean, isn't it called a jubilee year?
Yeah, I think that is a good reference to it. And I think that would actually serve as a great, number one, it would help restore the trust in Americans have in their own government. And that definitely needs to be worked on, because it's in a very dilapidated and deteriorated state right now, as well as giving people a little extra money in their own pockets to reinvigorate our economy. And, when you were speaking about being independent, I wanted to tell a really quick story, and I think it was really poignant. When, as a young boy, I remember riding in my dad's yellow pickup truck and talking about things that, I collected into my memory bank, and I forget why my dad was even talking about it to me, but it makes perfect sense now. Bless his heart, he passed away in 2002. But I do remember him talking about it and saying two things. Number one, he says, I know, and this was back in, probably 1975, he says, I know they've got a carburetor right now that will get 100 miles per gallon, but they refused and buy up the patents and refused to let that out because the energy oil fields, they want to be continuously dependent upon, make us dependent upon the foreign oil. And that was clear back then. So that was pretty wise for him to say, and it, we found out that that's true. They do have that. And we've got cars nowadays that are getting close to that, you know. Carburetor's been eliminated.
You're talking about the Plug carburetor, and my father-in-law, he was an incredibly handy guy. He built one, and two guys in black suits showed up. Mr. Babcock, listen, you're going to have to take that carburetor off your truck there that you're getting 50 miles to the gallon with and destroy it. Destroy that one sitting on your bench that you're building for your neighbor, Colonel Conrad. He said, what happens if I don't? He said, they said, we'll kill you. So I said, so what'd you do? He said, I believed him. I took it off.
Yeah. The other thing is my dad, he always said, he said, you know what? We have these great big, that we, the public, can finance. Like, let's just say we built a dam and put the generators in there to generate electricity for hundreds of thousands of people. And he goes, you know, over the years, our taxes went to pay for that. When it was paid for, the dam was paid for, and the generators were paid for, the public never got free electricity, you know. And he says, I've never understood that, you know. And I always thought to myself, you know, there's a point there. When you pay for something, you know, why are you going to still keep paying for the freight on it? And our electricity bills that we get nowadays, they don't near come close to the maintenance that is we would consider maintenance, you know. And so I've always thought about that and thought, you know what, the government in the higher positions, they've never actually started giving things to people that actually were paid for as a public service, okay. And I've always thought that that was wrong, you know, that if I ever got into the office of the president, that I would endeavor to actually give back to the people what had already been paid for and what was rightfully theirs. You know, in Alaska, all of the citizens get a paycheck as an accumulation for the oil that is got from the land. And I think that's a great idea. But anyway, from these ideas, I have developed an initiative that actually would help support our Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. You know, we've heard that there's just a bunch of IOUs in the Social Security now because they needed 700, $700 billion to finance Obamacare. And so I've always thought to myself, you know, this is the part of our country where our people have been very, very industrious, but they've always sent people into Washington that didn't have their interests in mind. Or when they got to Washington, they just found out that it was controlled by special interests and lobbyists. And I've never wanted to be sought the office so hard that I had to be controlled. You know, I've lived in a limited means myself. And if it wasn't a big house, you know, that was okay. You know, if I needed a campaign, something, a commercial or a campaign website, I built that myself, and I didn't care about pollsters, you know, and the expenses. I have no idea what these people spend their money on as far as, you know, I can understand hiring help is expensive, but I mean, when you start talking about millions of dollars, you know what I could do with $1 million? It'd be insane as far as the campaign is concerned. And that's why I really hope that people will consider my campaign for president to be a people's campaign and something that's going to benefit the people in the long run by getting someone in the office of the president who is very, very concerned and will talk to them personally and actually be transparent, not just say that I'm going to be transparent. And that's one of the things that I've done as far as taking this ineligibility of Barack Obama and McCain. I've got a track record. It's in court. If there wasn't any hope for America that we have, it's printed also on our money, as you brought it out, In God We Trust, on every coin, on every bill. If that wasn't a powerful effect, then there would be no record that represented a stand for our Constitution against both parties for the principle of this that is now in the United States Supreme Court in a very poignant time in our history. This is a very, very exciting time in our history. I have no reason whatsoever to be depressed about this. I am excited about this. And this is actually the mercy and the love that God has for our country that we should open our arms for and accept. So I'm a very positive person. I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to getting out and campaigning in every state of the nation, and we need your help to do that.
Well, I would have been there, done that, and Charles Collins was a good man, but he didn't quite recognize all of the problems that are associated with this. I do. I have studied this. I've studied history, and I've studied political science, and so I'm able to help if you want. And with me, it's really about financing. They have tried to close down my shows. They've tried to stop my magazines. They haven't succeeded entirely, but they certainly put a crimp into it. And go ahead.
I certainly thank you. I thank you so much, Clay, for the opportunity to come on your. I know in some cases we might not see eye to eye, but I think we have a clear understanding of each other. And I really appreciate all the work that you have done and that you have. Been involved with in doing what you've been doing. I really want to thank you for all of that. And if we look at things and we look at the people for the good that is in them, I think a new horizon rises for us. And, speaking of, the independence, that's exactly, the title of my book is Taking a Stand, The Conservative Independent Voice. And that's exactly, says in a nutshell, what I've represented. There's no reason the Democrats can't look at the word conservative and understand, even as Bernie Sanders, the most socialist of all, the Democratic candidate, stated, you know what, when he was asked if he embraced open borders, he said, no, absolutely not. That is getting rid of the nation. He said that is getting rid of a lot of wealth that's going to make the world a lot richer than it's going to make us. We need to protect our citizens. And this is from the most socialist Democratic candidate. He stood up for the border, the nation status. He stood up for the border status. And, he understands, I think, the problems, some of the problems that we're facing as far as the corporations, the big corporations that are basically using slave labor abroad and then bringing in products and manipulating the system and wanting an open border to be able to do that. One of the things that people really got excited about Donald Trump was the fact that he stood up and said, you know what, if Ford Motors Company is going to go over to Mexico instead of building that plant in Tennessee, I'm going to go over to the border, and next time, the very first car import that comes in from Ford Motor Company that was built in Mexico, I'm going to say, you know what, you need a $35,000 tariff right there. And then pretty soon, Ford gets the idea that it's actually cheaper for them to build the plant here in Tennessee and export or deliver that product to the American citizens. That is very, very poignant right there. He also stated that, you know what, he would make Mexico pay for the wall. People thought, how are you going to do that? He goes, you know what, I'll charge Mexico $100,000. Every illegal alien that comes over, they're going to get charged $100,000. Well, how are you going to collect that money? Well, guess what? Mexico is bringing over products and not paying a dime on taxes. They're making a fortune on us. They can afford that $100,000 for every illegal alien. I don't know why people think, and I know I think Rubio was asked this, and Ted Cruz was asked this in the last debate. He was asked, would you support a 5-year minimum mandatory sentence for someone that's continually violated the border? And he said yes, and I thought to myself, you know what, why not? I would send him back and make sure he doesn't come back over by enforcing the border first. Why would you want to house an illegal alien in our prison system for 5 years at the tune of $50,000 a year? That is that's $250,000 for every person that's incarcerated. Are you crazy, Senator Ted Cruz? That doesn't make any sense. And that's the kind of stupid things that our government leaders are doing and these people that are running for president are saying. And people don't understand them. So I'm very grateful to you, Clay, for giving me the opportunity to specifically lay those type of things out that need to be rebutted.
Well, I've got a poster here up for Donald Trump that ends up being I support Donald Trump. I mean, I've got a few things that I think he's wrong on, but he's right on more things. He says, I just want to make America great again. I will secure the border. I will bring jobs back and simplify the tax code. I will roll back job-choking regulations and the EPA. And that's what people who love America want to hear. That's why he's rising in the polls. We can't handle and appreciate, candidly speaking, it builds trust. I mean, he doesn't have to be right about anything.
Yeah,
but
exactly. I don't think any candidate really is. You know, I would say the biggest difference, I think there's a lot of things that I haven't, you know, I want to say for people that think that I'm just totally, you know, anti-Republican, that is not true at all. I mean, I have embraced the system, capitalist system that we have in competition in our health care. I think it's much, much better to keep prices down. You know, I thought that Obamacare is a mandate forcing people to pay something from the government was actually illegal. I mean, the Supreme Court called it a tax, of course, but they've also, you know, kind of hedged the bet on Obama's eligibility and the fact that he's not eligible. And there's been complaints that have come to him in the past. My case in the United States Supreme Court, 1252-76, that went in 2012, was one case right there. You know, when there's an agenda, they basically can manipulate the law to look and see the way they want to do it. And Congress had actually passed Obamacare, and so I think the Supreme Court was kind of conciliatory, and they tried to, you know, look at that in a way that Congress doesn't have, in fact, the right taxes, and if Obamacare was a tax, they had a right to implement it. So I have I've looked at you know, things like that. I thought, you know, we just need a little bit more of a balance. And you know, the things I was saying about the common things that I have in with Republicans and conservatives, you know, Donald Trump, like you said, he's tapped into a nerve in America, and he's rising in the polls because of this. But he really hasn't, in my opinion, demonstrated a single example on his platform that would actually help America as far as an initiative when he would become president. He has stated some of the things which I said he would raise tariffs up. And, that's going to start a war very quickly. So we need to be prepared for that because, you know, as soon as we start raising our tariffs and making trade fair, that's when you're going to have the other nations that say, you know what, we're going to go in and divide the United States by force. If we can't take advantage of them fairly.
On the political term, let me ask you two things real quick. One,
sure,
is what happens if you win? What happens if we're about to, do we get Joe Biden for president, who is a declared, I'm a Zionist. You don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist.
Well, the answer to that question is no, because Obama picked, we did not elect, we elected Obama, and Obama picked Joe Biden as his vice president. So I say no. And under the circumstances, if I win in the U.S. Supreme Court, what would happen is that Congress would probably be forced to take up a hearing on the matter, because let me make this really clear. If I win, basically I would get a monetary award or damage assessed to my the damage of my campaigns in 2008 and 2012. That's what I basically sued for, the damages. I haven't sued for the particular office of the president. I basically said, you know what, that's Congress's job. They have the job to do what they will with the president. They can impeach the president. They can remove him. Article Amendment number 14, Section 3, they can remove him, disqualify him as a, what they call a, an inability to do the office because of his lack of qualifications. That's what we call a disability. And that word is used in the Constitution concerning the president. If there is a disability and that concerns qualifications as well as a health condition, okay?
Let me push you along on this because there's something else that's important that I want to talk about. And it kind of falls in with this whole trade issue. There's a billboard that's just been put up in Las Vegas. $10 million a day to Israel. Our money is needed in America, and that's put on by a lady that I've had on my show many times, has been attacked just for being on my show. Her name's Allison Weir, If Americans Knew. And I pointed out, keep in mind that not a dime of that money went to any Jew that I know or have met, especially Naomi Wolf, who I spoke about earlier, that whom I write about and feature here. We're not dealing with groups of people, but with organized criminal. Sheldon Adelson, only being later the successor to Meyer Lansky. We're talking about organized crime, and I refer to Israel as the Khazarian. They hide behind the Jewish people, and they'll sacrifice 6 million in a heartbeat if it befits the cartels. It's
I think that there's bad people in every government. I'll just put it that way. You know what? And there's people that don't understand, or they're doing things for their own particular private interest rather than the interest of the people. Okay, and I think Israel is an ally, a strong ally for us, and we've been an ally to them. But I've also like what Senator Rand Paul said. He said, you know what, we can't afford, when he put out he has made a balanced budget. And he said, you know, in that balanced budget, some of the funds, or I don't know if they were all of them, I don't know, I haven't seen the budget, but he said, you know, some of those funds were cut from Israel. And people said, well, that's anti-Israel. And he says, well, he says, we can't afford to borrow money from China to get to Israel. And Benjamin, the Prime Minister of Israel, basically Benjamin Netanyahu, has said that, you know what, as soon as Israel is more independent, that is going to be more of a strength for Israel. I mean, they are a nuclear power in the Middle East, and, are showing confidence in Israel's own ability to protect themselves is good, but also standing by his mallet. But I don't think that America should be supporting so heavily as we have the interest even of our allies. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to...
If we don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons, then we ought to be taking a look at the nuclear weapons controlled by Israel and the Dimona plant there, because Israel has threatened to use those weapons against every capital in Europe. It's called the Samson option. Iran hasn't threatened anybody. So,
well, that's probably the reason that Israel still exists, though. You know, because they would have been run over a long time ago if they didn't have a nuclear power, because they're so small, and I understand that, you know, and, they haven't exercised that Samson. But I think every nation, if they were attacked from every side, would basically do the exact same thing. you know what, Russia, they would use that Samson mentality in a heartbeat, you know, and if people don't understand what that reference is because they haven't read the Bible for a while, Samson was the one that had great strength and long hair, and they he was beguiled by and cut his hair, and he lost his strength. They imprisoned him. They were able to keep him incarcerated because his hair was short. Then they busy with that, and his hair got longer while he was incarcerated. But they had blinded him just for, you know, faith's sake, and he has to be put between two pillars that basically encapsulated the what we would call the Senate or the House, the government. And while he was on there, he pushed those and broke those pillars, and it crushed the whole government and eliminated the corruption in the government, but it also killed himself. So that's what the Samson mentality is for people who haven't heard of that. And Israel has said, you know what, they will use it if they're threatened.
I believe.
And I think every nation would do the same thing.
Cody, I appreciate you being on here. And if you get to move further and you get some backing on there, I'd really enjoy working with you.
Okay. Well, hey, it was really nice to talk to you, Clay. I appreciate you having me on my show. On your show, and thank you so much for all the work that you do. And, you know, I'll just put another shout out there. If people want to go to my website, it's www.codyjudy.us. And my platform is also written in my book, Taking a Stand, The Conservative Independent Voice. And people can pick that up at Barnes & Noble or Amazon or their favorite book place. So I thank you so much for letting me be on your show, Clay, again.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. God bless you. Goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.